Hi, everybody. Welcome to F This Movie. I am Patrick Bromley, and with me tonight is...
Alex Lawson.
You say it like it's a disappointment.
It's like tough being me. It's like a cross I have to bear sometimes.
Okay.
No, I don't mean to sound so exasperated. Very excited to be here, like always. I think we're talking about... We're actually breaking some ground here.
Really?
In terms of the movie. Yeah, well, yeah. I have... if you want to tell the nice folks out there what we'll be talking about, I'll explain how it's so revolutionary in the this movie annals.
Okay. Annals is a funny word because it sounds like something else.
It does.
Tonight we are talking about Crash, the David Cronenberg movie about people that get in car accidents and fuck each other.
Wait a second.
Why? What's up? What's up?
Wait, hang on. Are you being serious?
Yeah. I thought that's what we agreed on.
Oh, I was really hoping we were talking about the tale of ethnic and racial strife in Los Angeles.
Yeah, with David Cronenberg, right? With the car crashes and the Rosanna Arquette leg wound fucking?
I'm really confused. Does that one have Ludacris in it?
Is he the one who fucks Rosanna Arquette's leg wound?
No. I think Ryan Phillippe is the one who fucks Rosanna Arquette's leg wound.
I watched the wrong movie.
Well, then like I said, this is really, a historical thing.
We're breaking ground. I'm going to talk about one movie, and you're going to talk about the other one.
And they both have the same title.
Never the Twain Shall Meet. No, actually, we're talking about the Paul Haggis Racism is Bad Best Picture winner Crash. Oh. Tell us why it's groundbreaking, though.
It's groundbreaking because... I've done two of them with you. You've done five F This Movie podcasts.
Yeah.
And the one sort of uniting thread of all the films that you've effed is that they all sort of have the goal of being really fun. People sort of bought their ticket and said, you know what? This is going to be something that I'll go like, oh, or yay, or wow.
I did all of those during Young Guns.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the one tenuous one, I guess, of the trip. But I mean, it's sort of, it's not really...
No, it was definitely designed to be fun. I agree with that.
Yeah, to be fun. This is not like that. I don't think people went, to see this thinking... Boy, this is going to be just a laugh riot.
Okay, once again, there's a good chance I totally misread this movie. I thought it was hilarious.
Parts of it are really, really funny. I mean, I think being molested by a police officer, I mean, it's edgy. It's edgy.
Edgy is a great word.
And being like, in full view of your husband, you could do a lot worse, I think. Yeah, way to go. just sort of really, really heavy, angry, loaded, dialogue-y piece. I don't know if you want to...
Well, it's history-making because it's the first, it's the first Best Picture winner. I was going to say it's the first Oscar winner, of course, forgetting the Best Visual Effects Oscar for Avatar.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Best Cinematography.
Oh, it won that, too.
Yeah, which is you created the cinematography in a computer. I don't understand.
That's
You didn't actually light anything. You didn't, it's all done, whatever.
It's too bad because Lou Diamond Phillips was really robbed for Young Guns.
Agreed.
As well. I mean, there should have been this should have, been the other Oscar winner. But hey, this is the first Best Picture winner.
Yeah.
And I think we'll talk about that too, because that was sort of why I thought it would be interesting to do this one. This has really sort of gained a reputation as the worst Best Picture winner ever. We'll talk about what that means and what if that's even something that can be measured or a title given.
Right.
Go ahead.
Let's do some housekeeping bullshit up front. Obviously, you're listening to the F This Movie podcast. Our website is fthismovie.blogspot.com. You're not going to find anything there, really, but the podcast. But go ahead, check it out. And a few shows ago on the Avatar show... Doug and I were having a conversation about movies that you have come around on, something you didn't like when you first saw it, Right. And then you saw it again and you liked it. And we got some listener email that I wanted to read on the show about this topic. It comes from Jennifer Susan, who sounds very pretty, I might say.
Those are two pretty names.
Yeah.
I've known a lot of Jennifers and a lot of Susans.
Yeah. She's like a human supergroup.
Oh yeah. Yeah. What did she have to say?
She says, in response to your Avatar podcast question, I hated Love Actually when I saw it in the theater. I honestly stood up with my hands in the shrug position and yelled at the camera booth, "What the hell was that? No one wants to see Laura Linney's boobs. Now I love it, actually. I still don't want to see Laura Linney's boobs, but I'm telling you, I love that fucking movie and watch it all the goddamn time. As ever, Jennifer Susan." So first of all, thank you very much for the email, Jennifer Susan. You sound beautiful.
Yep.
And very cool and smart and funny and like a real catch. But if you are inclined, listeners, to send a email about this topic or anything we talk about on the show, our email address is fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Please email us. Tell us what you think. Tell Alex to fuck off.
Yep. I'm good for that. Are we going to like respond?
I had to shoehorn that fucking email in.
All right,
I thought this email was fascinating, one, because I thought that was an interesting movie to reverse a position on. I guess I've always sort of felt the same about Love Actually. But what really sticks out to me is no one wants to see Laura Linney's boobs.
Thank you. You beat me to the punch on that one.
I just don't feel like you can speak for everyone when you say no one wants to see Laura Linney's boobs.
Therein lies the problem. Yeah. I have no qualms with one person saying I don't want to see Laura Linney's boobs, and that's fine.
I almost do have a problem with that.
Well, no, that's fine because you know what? More for us.
All right, good point.
And it's fine if you don't want to see Laura Linney's boobs, but yeah, to speak for the masses, I mean, I thought they were really, really spectacular. It's just odd to me of all the moments in the film that you could have an issue with for her to single out and say
Laura Linney's boobs.
I actually sort of like, I'm not gonna lie, I watched that movie last Christmas like everybody sort of does, and I sort of forgot. I mean, her boobs, it's not like they're like out for a really long time, right? I mean,
no, just, not really, and it's not in a way where they're sort of the focal point of the scene the way that a lot of nude scenes are done.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like the girl who runs in front of the camera on Airplane or something. Like, yeah, no.
They should have done it that way, though, I think. So anyway, Laura Linney, great boobs. Jennifer Susan, great email. Thank you so much. But
yeah,
Alex,
right.
What are some – is there a movie that you've come around on?
Well, you know what? I was actually just watching a movie last week. It was a movie called The Scout with Brendan Fraser and Albert Brooks. Are you familiar?
I mean, I know of it, but I've never seen it.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, it's about Brendan Fraser is a baseball player in the film. He's a highly touted pitching prospect who has a lot of psychological problems, and he gets drafted or he gets signed and given this huge contract by the New York Yankees. And Albert Brooks is his manager. He's the guy who titular scout.
Mm-hmm.
He found him and then he signed him, and he's like, he has him live with him, and Brendan Fraser has all these like sort of psychological issues, and he's always sort of like really close to flying off the handle. And I remember seeing it and thinking like that it really, really like sucked, because it was tonally very weird, because there are parts where that are just downright goofy. He takes him to this restaurant in New York where Tony Bennett is performing, and Brendan Fraser stands up and sings "I Left My Heart in San Francisco" in front of everybody, and just sort of steals his thunder, and Tony Bennett walks away. And then it ends with them on the roof of Yankee Stadium because he's too nervous to pitch in the World Series, and he tells Albert Brooks, without a hint of comedy, like there's dramatic music playing, "I'm going to throw you off this fucking roof." And it gets like really, really heavy. And I just thought it was a mess. And I just watched it again last week, and it's, you know, this is an interesting phenomenon. I mean, did you guys arrive at any sort of, like, it just sort of hit me in a different way, and I don't know why. Did you and Doug sort of arrive at any reason as to, like, you know, what leads to that phenomenon of just sort of coming around on something?
No, I mean, it's always something different, you know. Ultimately, it's like, obviously the movie doesn't change. It's you that changes. So maybe you saw a movie under bad conditions. Maybe you weren't in the right headspace. Maybe you come back to it and see something you didn't see in it before. I don't know. I've never seen The Scout because the pairing of Albert Brooks and Brendan Fraser wasn't enough for me to leave the house. But
it wasn't a draw for you?
No, it's weird. And it wasn't like a movie that Albert Brooks had written or directed. So
right, right. Yeah.
And Albert Brooks as an actor is maybe third behind Albert Brooks as a writer and as a director. So I like Albert Brooks, but no, I didn't go see The Scout.
What about for you as far as something?
Oh,
you,
my God. There's
there's a
ton of movies. Yeah. I mean, Avatar was a good example.
Yeah.
That's how the whole conversation kind of happened. But I find myself like, although I'm getting better at reading a movie correctly the first time, like the way you describe The Scout, it could be a movie that like, okay, I didn't like, maybe I was too young or something, and I would come back to it and watch it and say like, oh, all the weird shit, like the bad, awkward mix of comedy and drama, all of a sudden I would see that as a positive.
Yeah, well, yeah, that was it. It wasn't like I looked at it in a new way. The same things were there, but instead of like disliking those things, I really embraced those things.
Right, right.
And I don't know why. And again, that's me changing as a viewer and just sort of looking at it in a different way. But
well, the more movies you see, the more you start to appreciate a movie that you haven't seen before. And even if The Scout, you know, has a lot of familiar story beats, and even if it has Brendan Fraser, like maybe you start to appreciate, again, the weird mix in tone, and you're like, well, I haven't seen a movie that's like that before, you know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
The Butterfly Effect is not a good movie, right? But
no,
when
no,
I saw
no.
it but when I saw it, I was like, I didn't hate that because I didn't feel like I had seen it before.
Okay.
I haven't really seen it since, so maybe it's awful. But
so like you gave it points, I mean it earned points with you just for sort of uniqueness.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Yeah, I mean there's something to be said for that.
I end up liking every Richard Kelly movie. You know, did you see The Box?
I did not see The Box.
Yeah, I liked The Box because I was like, I fucking haven't seen that movie before. That movie was crazy. So I like that. And I still genuinely like Southland Tales. I will defend that movie. But
well, that, yeah, we can, I mean, we can F that one later if you care to, although that'll be, I'll be sucking it off for an hour and a half just because I really, I mean, you want to talk about just manic, just chaos.
Yeah.
I'm into that. I'm all about that.
That movie's good.
It's good stuff.
All right, so let's get into Crash.
Yeah, that's not the like we've not left Brendan Fraser in the of the discussion. I didn't intend for that. That was just my first thing there. But yeah, go ahead.
I just want to do a whole Brendan Fraser cast.
I don't think I've sufficiently prepared for that. I haven't seen George of the Jungle.
I have seen George of the Jungle, and I've seen...
No, I'm saying I haven't seen it in at least 10 years.
I saw that shit and Dudley Do-Right in the theater.
Wow.
There was a time in my life where I just went to see everything, and I didn't necessarily like either movie, although George of the Jungle isn't horrible.
Yeah, I... What else would be on a Brendan Fraser cast?
Well, I like the first Mummy that he did.
Yeah, the first one is cool.
Yeah.
Although I actually like it more for Rachel Weisz related
reasons. Well, of course.
And then, I've totally blanked. Anyway.
A Brendan Fraser movie?
Yeah.
Is it School Ties?
It's Encino Man.
Encino Man was the movie that...
I was like, why couldn't I... I mean, that launched his career. Well,
yeah.
To some extent, but I like that one.
And how funny that Pauly Shore was the biggest star in that movie at the time.
It's true. I'm glad we're putting these irons in the fire.
There is a Brendan Fraser movie that I legitimately like, by the way, Blast from the Past.
Oh, yes. That is good. That's good stuff.
I dig that movie.
Whatever happened to Alicia Silverstone?
Didn't she
like go crazy off the vegan trail of life?
Yeah. It was weird because watching Clueless, I was convinced like, oh, she's going to be a big movie star.
Well, who wouldn't be? Yeah,
it didn't happen.
Now we're talking about the Alicia Silverstone cast and
right, Excess Baggage, Batman and Robin, Labor Lost,
The Crush.
Crash.
Bring it all around.
Crash. Here's the thing. Okay, so I saw Crash when it came out in, I want to say 2005. On IMDb, it says 2004.
It says 04, but then it was in the 05 award season with Brokeback Mountain.
Because it came out in 2005.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think it got released in, like, April of 2005. Maybe it was made in 04. I don't know.
Yeah.
Came out in 05. So I saw Crash in 05. I thought it had a pretty great trailer. It had that fucking In the Deep song by Bird York, which, by the way, is an Amy Man ripoff. But we can get into just how much Crash attempts to rip off Magnolia. So I thought it had a good trailer. I went to see it. I think I liked it. I had a ton of problems with it. It won Best Picture. I thought to myself, I don't know if that's right. But yeah. But I didn't care that much, because as the years go on, I really don't give a shit about what wins Oscars anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time in my life, even 10 years ago, where it meant a lot to me. I still watch the Oscars. I'm not this fucking douchebag who's like, Oscars are meaningless. I'll watch something else that night. Like, no, it's a night where they're talking about movies. I'm going to fucking watch it. I enjoy it.
But you don't put a tremendous amount of personal stock in it.
I don't anymore. I used to. Yeah. Like, the year that Russell Crowe won over Tom Hanks in Castaway, I, like, was going to leave my then-girlfriend, now-wife's house. I was so mad. I'm like, I'm out of here.
I was watching it in a friend's basement, and like I was the only one who cared. Like I cared the most of anybody, and everybody, like, there was this like palpable tension when you know, it was announced, and everyone sort of looked over at me when he was sauntering his Aussie ass up there, and I'm just like, no way that just came to pass.
Is that the night you became a Cutter?
Cutter, Huff and Paint, Alky, the whole thing.
Wow.
Luckily, I was with friends.
So today was the first time I've seen Crash since 2005, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. I went to watch the DVD, and I pulled it out, and it was still wrapped in plastic. So
I was like, it's good. It's aged well.
I guess I haven't felt compelled to watch Crash since I saw it. And now, you know, talking about movies that we've come around on in one way, I think watching Crash today may have had the opposite effect on me.
I really couldn't agree more, and that won't make for the most compelling discussion, just agreeing and agreeing. But yeah, I was always a person who was sort of defending it. And again, the Oscar stuff is a different, you know, sort of animal as far as assessing a film's value. But there's some problems that I really sort of forgot about, and I even had some problems. But
yeah, for years, you know, and like you said, people have called it the worst Best Picture winner ever. And I'm not positive that's true. People say the same thing about American Beauty. I really don't agree with that. American Beauty has problems, but I definitely don't think it's the worst Best Picture winner ever.
People say that about American Beauty, really?
Oh, yeah. But again, it's like this weird kind of hipster thing where it's just like everybody becomes too cool for something. And from the very beginning, people were definitely too cool about too cool for Crash. And part of that is like, for all of its faults, Crash is sincere and well-intentioned. So there's going to be, I think, some backlash against that. But for years, people have just, you know, that's the worst fucking Best Picture winner ever. And I've always thought, well, no, it's not that bad. Again, I hadn't seen it, but I was like, I think I remember liking things about it. I kind of liked it when I saw it. And then watching it again today, I was like, oh, so have I become more cynical, or do the hipsters have a point?
Yeah. I mean, I guess that is a good question to sort of frame the discussion around. I guess there were two, there's like sort of two things that really stand out. This is sort of what we were talking about when we effed The Matrix Reloaded, in that there are parts of it that blow me away. And by that, there's two sequences. I don't know if you want to sort of set the stage with what we do as far as the, you know, just sort of breaking down this, like, you know, who the people are and stuff before we get into actual sequences.
Probably not. I think I'm going to bail on plot summaries. But Crash is about people in Los Angeles who are racist, and everyone knows each other.
Yep.
Spoiler.
Everyone knows each other. And there are no happy couples. If you're in a couple in this film, you are not happy.
But you're also racist.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even like, you know, even if you're in a mixed race couple, like there is one in here, you have relationship problems based on your racism.
Yeah.
Spoilers
for Crash, by the way.
Yeah. Don't, both editions of Crash, because you already found out the other one involves a leg wound fucking.
That scene is so hot. Yeah,
it's really, really great. I do want to say this, that among the movie's faults, I don't think acting is really one for the most part. I feel like everyone's sort of doing okay. And more than that, even more than just doing okay in the parts, I feel like this movie is like, it has people in it. It has actors playing, they're playing the types of roles that I think they should play more often.
Brendan Fraser should play more district attorneys.
More district attorneys. Like Sandra Bullock, for example, like now, you know, Oscars, speaking of Oscars, I mean, she's, you know, sort of broken through the queen of the romantic comedy, you know, genre or whatever. But when this came out, she was still sort of doing all that stuff. And I remember, I do remember when I saw it the first time, and she was angry and, you know, calloused and just really just spouting all this, you know, angry stuff. And it wasn't overly showy. And I really, I really sort of bought it. And I'm like, oh, I think she should do, you know, stuff like that more often, not, you know, forces of nature.
Yeah, I think people kind of had a hard time taking her seriously in Crash, because mm-hmm. it was probably the most dramatic thing she had done to that point, with the exception of Speed 2 Cruise Control. But, and now, of course, she is the best actress in the country.
and a wounded lamb, because she married a man who fixes motorcycles for a living.
I like Sandra Bullock. I didn't like The Blind Side, and I didn't particularly like her in The Blind Side.
And I
don't particularly like her in Crash. But I think I know she's playing an unlikable character, but I just think the character is poorly, poorly written, like mm-hmm. most of the characters in the movie. But continue. What are the two sequences that blow you away in Crash?
The two sequences that blow me away in Crash. The first one is when Matt Dillon, who plays Officer John Ryan, the bigoted white police officer in the LAPD, it follows him when he pulls over Terrence Howard and Tandy Newton, and he, you know, molests her. That's not the scene that blows me away. Although, like I said, really, really revs my engine. Then when she gets in a car accident and he rescues her, he goes in there and the car is like about to start on fire, and she's sort of out of it, and then she comes to and sees him, and she's just, she's overcome with, I mean, it's already like a really, really fearful situation, and then she sees that, you know, this like monster who did this awful thing to her, and she just hates it. And then he sort of, you know, in that moment makes just it like has to coalesce with, you know, who he is and what he did. And he just has to overcome it in that moment and rescue her. And in fact, they pull him out of the car when she's still in there, and he goes back in, and like the music is fantastic. And, at the very least different. I want to talk about the music later too. But I really like that. And then the other one, is when the angry Persian store owner goes to gun down the locksmith, played by Michael Pena, and fires a blank, but he doesn't know it's a blank, as his daughter jumps into his arms. And it's a little showy, and it's a little, look at this great thing we've put together, but I think it's a really great thing they've put together. In both of those, and those stand out above the rest. They try to have moments like that for all the other characters as well that don't come together nearly as well.
Yeah.
But those two sort of, those are the high water marks of the, you know, the dramatic tension, I guess.
Okay. The Matt Dillon, Tandy Newton scene, I would agree with you. And that remains the scene in the movie that stands out. That was probably my favorite scene the first time I saw it. It was again, my favorite scene today. More from almost from a suspense angle than anything dramatic or thematic that's going on, but it's just a well put together scene where you aren't sure he's going to get her out in time before the car explodes.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that the movie is able to say, yes, he's a racist, but he's also a hero, is one of the few examples of I don't even know if subtlety is the right word, because there's nothing subtle about this movie. But it's at least a sort of a gray area instead of just black or white, if you'll forgive the term.
I won't. I'm going to have you dismissed. I'll be flying solo. I will be effing crash alone.
Yeah. So Matt Dillon is really good in the scene. I was less crazy about Tandy Newton, who I think gives a very abrasive performance in the movie. And again, that's partially the character, but partially her.
No, it's a lot to do with her.
Yeah. It's not,
it's very shouty.
Yeah. It's just not a performance I liked at all. I kind of like the scene too, where Terrence Howard, who's been emasculated throughout the movie because his wife is molested in front of him, and she's constantly sort of at him about it, and they have some decent exchanges, but again, it's always so angry and shouty. But there's a scene where he finally kind of flips out and has like a standoff with some cops. And again, the first time I saw it, I remember thinking, boy, this really could go either way. It's possible that they're going to shoot him, you know, and he does, I think, a lot of good acting in the movie. Mm-hmm. But again, that scene doesn't really work for me because he's just out shouting pigs Ryan Phillippe saves him and just nothing. Oh, okay. So now you mentioned this other scene with the invisible fucking bulletproof vest, or what is she wearing that she thinks?
It's the invisible cloak.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ. So you, you mentioned my least favorite scene in the entire movie.
Oh my God, I'm so glad this happened. This is great. This is good. Well, no, I'm really glad, because this represents a philosophical split between the two of us, and this is good. Why is it your least favorite scene in the movie?
Because I think in a movie, I think it's the best example of just how stupidly manipulative and corny and simple-minded so much of the movie is. And even when they're setting that shit up early on, where he puts the invisible cloak on her, I mean, you just want to fucking kill yourself. It's so, I get it. Like, in the moment where you think she's shot, you are, the first time I saw it, I was like, oh my gosh, that is fucking heavy, you know? And I don't feel like the movie earned that moment, but okay. Michael Peña gives a good performance. The guy playing the store owner, he gives a good performance. I get it. But like, I don't think the movie earns that moment. And then to really fucking upset you, they're like, oh my God, they just killed a kid. No, wait, they didn't. It's blanks. Everything's okay, America. And that is such manipulative bullshit.
It's a little manipulative.
A little? You really think a little?
It's okay. I'll even say it's very manipulative. But I mean, but that doesn't mean it's insincere. I mean, because like you said, Michael Peña gives a really great performance. I think he actually might give my favorite performance in the movie, because I said no one's happy here. And everyone's a racist. He's actually the one. He's probably the happiest person.
He's the only good guy.
And probably the least racist.
He's not racist. He's not an asshole to anyone. He's just trying to do a job and be a dad. And he's a good guy. I don't think the moment is sincere, because look, I'm not looking for any movie to kill a fucking kid. Okay.
But it sounds like that's what you're looking for. It sounds like you would have been a lot happier if she just bled out in the street.
I might have been, and that sounds horrible. That sounds horrible, but it's true, because I think it would have not made the scene a manipulative bullshit cheat. It still would be manipulative because they're hurting a kid.
Kill a kid, yeah.
Right, but okay, so if your point is like, boy, the kid is the one who pays for all this tension, all this racism, all this bullshit, which isn't totally fair, again, because Michael Peña didn't do anything wrong, so there's no reason why his fucking kid should pay. But if your point is, look, it's the innocents who suffer, and it's the innocents who bleed for these problems, then that's – you need to fucking commit to that shit and don't just say like, nope, it's a blank. She has an invisible cloak. Everything's okay.
Okay, well, you – I mean
– that's why it's insincere.
Well, I mean, the invisible cloak thing, I mean, that's – I mean – that would be one thing if they actually credited it to the invisible cloak. I mean, he gave that to her to protect her from a harsh and scary world where everybody's mean and angry at each other because a bullet flew through her window.
And you know what?
Where they used to live.
I'm even fine with that scene, but don't make that the reason then that she decides to run in front of the gun.
She's a kid. I mean, what? Of course she would.
Nope.
I, you know.
Nope. Fuck that.
All right. I mean, Oh, fuck you. Fuck you and fuck this movie and fuck this podcast. No, I mean, I just really, really, really dig it. And you know, there's very little that I can say to refute, exactly what you're saying as far as it being a cheat. I guess I sort of see it as just sort of speaking to the notion of this is what can happen if these sort of things are left, you know, sort of unchecked.
And I agree with that, but that point is made 10 times in the movie. Racism only leads to, you know, gun violence, basically, like, or falling down the stairs. If you're racist, you might fall down the stairs.
That's, well, yeah, and I won't even say that it's not repetitive, because the whole thing is sort of repetitive, but if you're repeating that, I mean, if you're going to keep hammering a point home, and they make a point to do that, that is the best way, in my opinion. I mean, I'm glad you mentioned the falling down the stairs thing, because everybody who's in the movie is obviously drifting through some racially charged crisis, and then they're faced with a really intense situation that helps them come to terms with that crisis. And Sandra Bullock is falling down the stairs, and none of her friends want to help her.
No, because they're all getting massages. I mean, it's just so goddamn, it's so simple-minded.
That's totally lame. I mean,
they're rich and white, so they can't be bothered, and it's her Mexican maid that helps her out and cures her of racism. I'm not a racist anymore. A Mexican helped me
when I fell down the stair.
It's so bad. I mean, all of the racists by the end of the movie are sort of cured of their racism. And then anyone who wasn't a racist, which is pretty much just Ryan Phillippe.
Yeah.
Turns out he is a racist. And why is he a racist? Because he shoots and kills an unarmed Lorenz Tate. But that's fucking bullshit, too. Like, Ryan Phillippe could turn out to be a racist in a way that doesn't have him shooting and killing a guy. And the whole point is like, oh my gosh, I killed him because he was black. Well, no, that's not really what happened. And then to say like, oh, and he was unarmed, he wasn't going to hurt me. But we've seen him sticking people up the entire movie. If you really want to have that beat, don't make it that character, Paul Haggis. Not every storyline and character has to intersect. I know that's your big fucking master plan, right? But like, just have it be a random guy so that we in the audience don't know what he's capable of. We don't know who the guy is. We don't know if he has a, you know what I mean? Like, we've seen Lorenz Tate. We spent the whole movie with him. He's a fucking stick up man. He hasn't hurt anybody, but he certainly has the potential to do so. So when Ryan Phillippe, you know, like, oh, it's horseshit. It's horseshit.
You know what? You know what's really rough about that scene is that until that, you know, quote, resolution, if you want to call it that, of that scene, I think that's a really well-written scene as far as what the theme of the movie is, undue racial tension. Because this tension starts to build between them, even though they haven't, no one has said anything racial at all. They're sort of talking about, like, the music and what he was doing in the, you know, in the valley.
Right.
And they're sort of exchanging these looks. It's actually really well acted and really well written. But then, yeah, like you said, if it builds to just getting shot in the chest for no real reason.
And why not just have Lorenz Tate, you know, make a move for something and Ryan Phillippe out of nowhere to be like, ah, what are you doing? And go for his gun or something. And then we say like, oh gosh, look, he was scared. Maybe he isn't. Maybe he has some racism after all. But again, the movie it's like this it's this all or nothing mentality. It's just like, no, we can't work in subtle strokes. He has to pull his gun and kill the guy and then leave him on the side of the road and burn his car, which it has nothing to do with the character that we spent the entire movie with, who's like a pretty upstanding guy who's trying to do the right thing. Yeah. It's lazy and it's obvious and it's easy. And I just wish... Look, racism is a difficult topic to handle for a movie, and I guess to some extent appreciate Paul Haggis trying to take it on. But it's the equivalent of like an after-school special about drugs, where it's one message and it's very obvious. There are no examples of like subtlety in the movie or anything that like an audience member can deal with or can relate to. If that's the point of your movie, if you're trying to expose this idea that, look, a lot of people have some racism in them, and in some people it's really fucking on the surface, and in some people it isn't. It comes out in these small ways that maybe they even aren't aware of. And the movie needed to address that and make audience members confront those feelings. But because every interaction is so on the nose, and
it's very broad strokes.
It takes 2 seconds for every character in the movie to all of a sudden be like, well, I would expect that from you people. Like, no, this isn't how people act. This isn't even how racist people act. It comes out in small ways. It doesn't automatically just turn into like, well, we speak American here. I mean, it's just so goddamn obvious.
You had mentioned, when you saw it, that you thought it had a cool trailer, and that, you know, I'm sure you were intrigued by, you know, the cat. It has a really impressive cast, obviously, and all that. When I saw this, I knew nothing about it. I had seen no trailer, and I knew there was a movie called Crash, and all I knew was that it involved a carjacking of Brendan Fraser's car. I didn't even know that he was a district attorney. I didn't know it dealt with racism.
That was enough for you to want to see it. You're like, fuck, a fucking movie where Brendan Fraser gets carjacked?
I forget the exact
one, please.
I'm signing up for that. I mean, I saw Encino Man.
I've seen him fight mummies. I've seen him swing through the jungle. I've never seen that motherfucker get carjacked.
Let's go now.
I've seen him befriend homeless Joe Pesci.
Let's see it twice.
I've seen him confront anti-Semitism in a private school.
These are and now I want to see him, you know, gun in his face from Ludacris. I didn't know it was Ludacris, but yeah. But my point is that your statement of everything being really on the nose and you not having to sort of put anything together for yourself or contemplate anything for yourself was really reflected in when I saw it, because it sort of hits you with all the subtlety of a sledgehammer, and you know, I mean, like the first thing you see, Jennifer Esposito gets out of the car and just starts, you know, saying, you know, you no see my Blake light to that Asian woman.
Right, right.
And from then on, it's a series of angry racist vignettes.
Just people insulting each other and just being openly, hatefully racist. And yes, those people exist. And I don't have a problem with you having one or two of those examples in the movie. But you have to show different colors of the spectrum. That's not what I want to say, but you know what I mean? Like different levels of racism. I know that sounds so dumb, but like,
no, it doesn't sound dumb. I because like you said, it's not always the same across the board. But that's what they would have you believe here. And it's just sort of like, I mean, like all of them could have been obviously altered. Some of them could have just been dropped. I'm talking about just some of these vignettes. It was an admirable choice casting Ludacris Bridges. I find him really hard to watch.
Oh, see, I think he does a pretty good job in this movie.
Really? I feel like all the scenes with him and Lorenz Tate, they look like they're in a high school play. I mean,
they do a little bit, and they're sort of just this Rosencrantz and Guildenstern where they just ride around and have funny conversations, and it doesn't really pay off in any way except for, you know, Lorenz Tate getting shot and Ludacris Bridges being cured of racism because he rescues the slaves in the back of the van that he doesn't know are in there.
He doesn't know her in there, and then, well, I mean, he's cured of racism.
And then he goes right back to insulting
fucking,
their race.
Fucking goofy Chinaman, I believe, are his
example. Right, go buy everyone chop suey. Because, again, everyone has the racial beliefs of a third grader raised by skinheads. Like,
I know.
Jesus. And, okay, so when I first saw the movie, I liked it more, and who could say why? But there's that whole long In the Deep musical montage, which actually advances nothing and very little to illuminate any of the characters' plights. I mean, it's just Matt Dillon like looking pensive. Okay, but nothing. We don't know what's changed about you, and I don't, you know, I don't have to know that he's changed, but then don't include a shot of him. I don't know. So whatever, that sequence, I like the song. Again, it's just ripping off an Amy Mann song, and it really is trying to do some things that Magnolia does much, much better. But it gets to the end of that sequence, and Don Cheadle finds his brother's thing on the side of the road, and
who is revealed to be Lorenz Tate. I mean, I guess that's what's supposed to pass off for, like,
I mean, did we not know that already? I thought we already knew that.
Yeah, well, I mean, we knew it. We're smart dudes, and I mean, you don't even have to be that particularly smart. And then I feel like it's supposed to be a big, like, because he sees his shoe, and then he looks over, and he, you know, which is just weird in a movie that's supposed to be about changing yourself and, you know, relieving racial tension, that then there's this plotty sort of, you know, just twist, that's his brother, ah, and that's like one of the last things you see. I'm glad you mentioned the song, what's the name? In the Deep. Yeah. I had forgotten how much the last like 10 minutes or so of this thing is just like a music video.
Right.
And like you said, it's a good song, and it was nominated for an Oscar too, I think.
I think so.
But yeah, nothing. I mean, Magnolia is pretty sweet because they actually like sing, which is totally weird.
Right.
And it's a better song, with more meaningful themes in it, but at least something it's participatory. But yeah, this is.
And it finds all of the characters at a key moment in their lives and in the film, and then it progresses from there. It's like the last moment for each of them before they move on to their conclusions. Mm-hmm. And this is just them sort of at their conclusions, you know?
Yeah, it's, and they're wandering around Los Angeles, and it's right. Snowing.
Well, it's ash, right? I mean...
Well, I mean, I guess.
That fucking burning car scene with Terrence Howard. Oh, whatever. Anyway.
You want to talk about going on for too long.
But that happens and whatever. And Don Cheadle finds the thing, and it, I don't remember if it fades to black or not, but if it does, I think it's a better movie because what it goes on to is Ludacris freeing the Chinese slaves. And then the thing that most egregious that I always hated about the movie is that it ends on this laugh. That it ends on another car crash, which is how the movie opened, with these two people shouting racial slurs at each other. And watching it at home, I felt less like it was sort of geared towards a comedy than I did the night I saw it in the theater. I remember the audience laughing at that moment, and it was sort of this tension release. But, like, what are we laughing at? We're laughing at two people being racist to each other.
I remember being confused about that when I saw it.
You spend 2 hours saying, like, listen, this is a problem. We got to take this seriously. Oh, no. It's kind of funny, though. Hee, hee, hee. Ba, 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 ba.
Yeah, the woman whose car gets hit is the worker who, like, wouldn't throw Matt Dillon a bone.
Right.
And I actually didn't notice that the first time. And
we're all connected. Don't
because
you
everybody
see?
Knows each other. But the other driver isn't anybody. It's just this woman, and she got hit. And then she says, you know, I'm not going to. I believe as the, you know, the music is starting and the credits are beginning to roll, she says something to the effect of like, I'm not gonna say anything until you start speaking American.
Right. I mean, it's an embarrassment.
This is what you're leading us with? I mean, this is what a mess.
It's an embarrassment. I really felt like watching it this time, I felt like almost every scene was not just not good, but almost aggressively bad. And I didn't feel that way the first time I saw it. And again, do people have a point saying it's the worst Best Picture winner ever? Not necessarily. I don't know. But I don't think it's a very good movie. And it did, in fact, win Best Picture against... Let's talk about what it beat out. Brokeback Mountain,
yeah. What else was even...
Capote.
Uh-huh.
Good Night and Good Luck.
Yeah.
And Munich.
Well, the real... The real loser there is Munich, in my opinion. Although, if I remember correctly, that was not ever really on the radar as far as was going to win. I mean, Brokeback Mountain was the big, that was the one that was really upset. Correct?
Right.
Am I remembering that right?
Yeah.
Which is a movie that has problems too. It's better than Crash.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, and I love Munich. Maybe we'll talk about Munich sometime.
I love Munich as well. Of that list of movies, that's definitely my favorite.
Yeah, me too. What in the world could have led to something like that as far as people just sort of deciding, yeah, this is it? I don't want to make this into a thing where we crawl inside the brain of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. But, I mean, were they just scared of the gays? Is that what it comes down to?
I mean, that was certainly one theory being floated. If I'm real conspiratorial minded, you could say, you know, white guilt. People voted for Crash because of white guilt. I don't know.
True.
I mean,
yeah.
It was, I guess, just a movie of the moment. Paul Haggis was kind
Not
of
off a Million Dollar Baby.
Yeah, and kind of a golden boy, and he was directing a movie. It had a big cast, an impressive cast. It kind of snuck in out of nowhere. It was made real low budget. Paul Haggis was like shooting shit in his own house.
Mm-hmm.
It was distributed by Lionsgate, which wasn't a studio that people took seriously for Academy consideration.
That was something I totally forgot too until I saw the logo come up at the beginning of the film. Like, oh, it's an LG effer.
Yeah, that was probably the one thing that I was happy about the night that it won. And again, the night that it won, I wasn't like, what? This is fucking bullshit, because I hadn't really hitched my wagon to any of the movies. I liked Munich the best, but I knew it wasn't going to win.
Yeah, no, it wasn't really.
So I didn't give a shit. So I didn't care when it won, but I was happy that, like, wow, Lionsgate has a Best Picture win under their belt. Now they can make crank movies till the end of time. So I don't know. I it was just the right movie for the moment. Roger Ebert was a big champion of the movie.
He
named it the best movie of the year, which is difficult to. I have a harder time fathoming that than I do the fact that it won Best Picture.
Right, because no one's. I mean, he arrived at that of his own free will.
Exactly.
There was no
crash was decided by committee,
bureaucratic voting or anything
right,
like that.
Right.
Yeah, that's I guess that's sort of troubling. I really like when I was speaking before about actors who should play roles like this more often. I remember being impressed. This is something that stayed constant between the two viewings. I remember being impressed with Matt Dillon before, and I really liked him again this time.
Yeah, he's the best thing in the movie.
Yeah, without a doubt, because he. He never really gets – I mean, I don't feel like he ever gets thrown really good roles. And maybe he – maybe I'm making him a victim there. Maybe he picks lousy roles.
Maybe you didn't see a little movie called Armored.
I saw it.
I totally did too.
I did. I paid. I said, I want to see it right now. Yeah, but I mean, you know, I mean, yeah, it's stuff like that. Just sort of assembly line
right.
sort of things. I mean, you know, he was in that one of those – wasn't he in The Love Bug?
Yeah, Herbie Fully Loaded.
Yeah, Herbie, of course, yeah. Yeah.
He's in fucking Old Dogs.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah. He's only got a couple of scenes, but
I mean, this is the best work he did.
He's a giant racist in that movie too.
Yeah, he is. He's the best. this is the best work he's done since Something About Mary, which was six, I guess it would have been 7 years prior to this at that point.
Yeah.
But again, it's not as though here's what's sort of fascinating about it. It's not like he dramatically changed anything that he really does. It just was a really good role for him to sort of use his natural gifts. It's not like he, you know, gained a ton of weight and, you know, like it was, you know, with some sort of showy, goofy accent or something. It was just sort of the role was, you know, a guy who was very angry and, you know, just sort of, you know, an aggressive sort of alpha male type who just wanted answers. All, you know, I mean, and even though he was like a totally bad dude, he just wanted to help his dad. That one shotter where he gets out of bed and tries to help his dad off the toilet because he's got the urinary tract infection, and then he just shoos him away. That's all really, really good stuff. And
while it's no great revelation, I like the fact that the movie suggests that obviously his dad is a racist too, and it's, you know, that this doesn't come from nothing, that this was learned for him.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, well, no, they, well, don't they say, I mean, that he was like employing black people in his, like, in the business that he started, and that he was like working alongside them, and that then, you know, the government gave minority owned businesses the preference, and he actually says, he never complained about it, but I'm complaining about it for him. That's what he says to the woman. Right? I mean,
listen, I'll be honest. I've never seen Crash.
Oh boy.
I need to come clean.
The curtain is pulled back.
Yeah. Today I watched The Mask with Jim Carrey. And this whole time I thought that's what we were talking about.
You've done yeoman's work to fool me and all the listeners.
Do you know what I'm thinking of? I totally fucked up. I'm thinking of Monsters Ball.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That I was when you're talking about Billy Bob Thornton, the whole thing.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. Monsters Ball and fucking Peter Boyle in the chair, just being a racist fucker.
That's the one. No, yeah, Matt Dillon. That's that, and that makes the character more compelling. It's the opposite thing. He, you know,
right.
I mean, he saw from afar his dad sort of, you know,
right.
get screwed by the government for those reasons and never complain about it. And now he's just so angry because the burden is now on him to sort of take care of him. And he needs an outlet, you know, and it's all really, really, it's right in his wheelhouse. And it's the kind of stuff he should do more of. I don't even know when was the last thing he was even, it was Armored, right?
Armored,
I
mean, yeah. And now he's in another movie coming out this year. Called like Grabbers or something, which looks so much like Armored down to several of the cast members, but it also has Hayden Christensen and Paul Walker, which I'll be honest, I had no idea those two could occupy the same space at the same time. I was without convinced
some sort of without some sort of cataclysmic
yes
universe collapsing event.
Yes, yeah. It's like like when the two Ron Silvers meet in Time Cop. I mean, things can get fucked up. All right. Well, I guess that kind of does it for Crash. I don't think I've said this about a movie yet, but F Crash.
Yeah, I think
F it in its A.
I think we can F it. And you know what? Not in a nice way.
No.
In a mean way.
Yeah.
So.
Like in an angry way.
Yeah. Like a.
Like in a way that I would F Heidi Montag.
Ooh, just angry and. Yeah. I mean, maybe it ends with a Vanilla Sky-esque. Pillow suffocation. I don't know.
Except I would suffocate myself.
Yeah, because that's how that works.
And then fuck her face up.
All right.
Thank you very much, Alex. Don't forget, you can always email us fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. The website is fthismovie.blogspot.com. And this is F This Movie.
Don't see Crash.